Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today we are exploring the world of curve benders. And my guest is David Knorr, who will share with us why strategic relationships will power your nonlinear growth in the future of work, curve benders. So David is a senior leadership board advisor, researcher, executive educator, and best-selling author, and is internationally recognized as the leading expert on applications of strategic relationships in profitable growth, sustained innovation, and lasting change. Now, he's the author of 11 books, one of which I have right now. One of the books is Relationship Economics. The other one is Co-Create, and as well as the book that I just mentioned, Curve Benders. He also serves as a trusted advisor to global clients and coaches corporate leaders. David is a Forbes leadership contributor on the future of work and an Inc.com contributor on relationship economics. And his unique insights have been featured in a variety of prominent publications, including the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Fast Company, Huffington Post, Business, Entrepreneur, and Knowledge at Wharton. He's also the host of the popular Curve Benders podcast. David, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's good to have you here.
Denise, delightful to be with you.
Oh, thank you. I read your entire bio. I'm losing my voice. I'm so sorry. I read your bio, and I was breathless after I read it. I said, there's no way I can say all that on the internet. So what I would like for you to do is, if anything important that you want people to know, if I missed it in that intro, share it now, and then we'll get to talking about curve benders.
You did a brilliant job. What your audience may not know is I'm actually 95 years old, right? I sound fabulous for 95, but no, you did a great job. I'm just passionate about, and I've really been a student for the last two decades around business relationships and how they work, how do we apply them to get more done in a business context, how do we become more intentional and strategic in the relationships we choose to invest in. So look forward to sharing some of those ideas with your audience.
Oh, thank you. We were talking just now in my virtual green room, and you know, I mentioned that because we're in a whole new world. We have been since the first of the year, practically, where I think our audience is really anxious to learn new things, to learn new ways of thinking, of doing, of communicating, you know, of being strategic instead of just, you know, jumping in the car, going to work, coming home. And, you know, now we're not forced to really think about things, but it wouldn't be a bad idea to really think about things and work smartly. So I'm really excited to have you here to share with us how we can be more strategic.
You bring up a great point. And if we haven't learned anything from this 2020, we should learn that it's all about nonlinear growth. So if you think about it, Denise, we had to go back and learn how to wash our hands again, right? We have to go back to, you know,
really,
we all
people
became,
weren't doing,
you know,
that.
Right. So we all became, you know, video meeting experts. And I don't know about you, I had like 12 Zoom meetings last Thursday. And it's just a new way that we've all had to show up. And it really reiterates your comment that we have to be more intentional about learning and growth. And I would submit that, and we'll talk more about this, this idea of nonlinear growth is, how do I learn more? How do I learn it more quickly? And how can I immediately apply what I learn to just remain relevant? And I believe this change that we faced with this global pandemic is just the beginning. And people hate to hear that, but I think we're going to have to change and adapt and maneuver much more often and much more quickly. And the sooner you learn how to get comfortable in that environment, I think the sooner you'll not just survive, but really think about thriving and benefiting from market tailwinds.
So we're talking about agility here. And listen, I've heard for the last, when did this start? January, February, March? When did this even start? The word that I keep hearing, and got good and sick of it, is the word pivot. I think we need to be agile and we need to be adapting. I don't know about pivot. What do you think about that?
Yeah, along the same, I think it's one of those overused and unfortunately often misunderstood terms. What I want your audience to really think about is more about resiliency and more mm-hmm. about this idea of elasticity, right? So think about it. What knowledge, what skills, what behaviors do you have today that are very transferable, regardless of what obstacles you face, that can, just like a rubber band, propel you to the other side of it, propel you not just through the difficult times, but how will you be in a more improved or better condition on the other side of it? Because if you haven't learned more about yourself through this pandemic, if you haven't learned more about what I believe is your biggest asset, which is your relationships through this pandemic, I think it's a missed opportunity. And more importantly, how can you, and Denise, that's the fascinating conversation I'm having with a lot of leaders, how can we prepare for the next one? It may not be another global pandemic. The next disruption could be cyber. It could be a natural disaster. But one thing this pandemic has demonstrated is how woefully underprepared we were. And imagine, a lot of us are knowledge workers. We're online all the time. What if we couldn't get internet access?
What if we couldn't connect?
Right? I don't want to be a naysayer. I don't want to be a doomsday guy. But can you imagine how different our lives would have been if we couldn't get online? Well, that's exactly what a cyber or a massive, the next massive disruption could bring. So what is your resilience quotient? What is your ability in that, again, to think of that elasticity to develop those skills, knowledge, behaviors now to propel you through whatever that next disruption may turn out to be?
Listen, I think about that because I am virtual. I used to swear that God created the internet for me. It's all mine. I let y'all use it, but it's mine. I'm telling you. I'm not entirely sure I have given up that idea. So if something happens to the internet, oh my. I think about it. I worry about it. And I'm not a worrier as a rule of thumb, but that's got me concerned. So like you, like what you're telling our audience, I'm trying to figure out, well, what is it that I do? I have a lot of knowledge. I have a lot of skills. It's all done on the internet. What happens next? I don't have any answers
sure.
just yet, but I'm looking.
So along the same lines, again, pre-pandemic, Denise, I was on the road 208 days last year, right? I did 62 global speaking engagements. A lot of my business was literally, some people, I jokingly would say, you know, some people get in a car to go to work. I get on a plane to go to work. When this thing hit in February and March, I immediately saw we're not going to get together anytime soon. So immediately I doubled down on digital, right? So high-end camera and lighting and microphone and a digital presence. More importantly, what skills, what knowledge do I have? What value do I bring to my relationships that I can immediately and forcefully take online? And you know what? You have to start, and this is the whole part of learning and growing. You have to be willing to be really bad at something. I look back on the first few things we did online, and I'm telling you, they're like cringeworthy, right? You're just like, oh my God, did we really do that? And it's because you're willing to be bad at something to learn and to grow through it. And by the way, fail as fast as possible so you can learn as quickly as possible and immediately apply that learning to the very next opportunity. That's
exactly
how we adapt at an accelerated pace.
Listen, I agree with you. When I go back, I've been podcasting for almost 13 years now, and I almost never listen to my own podcast for a couple of reasons. Number one, I was in the conversation. I remember it. Like this conversation we're having right now, I'm in it. We're live. We're talking. I don't edit. I don't play with it. It's live. So it sticks with me. The other reason is I can't stand the sound of my own voice. anytime I accidentally hear my own voice, I think I'm going to burst into "Happy birthday, Mr. President." I think I sound ridiculous. So I don't go listen. I know. But every once in a while, I'll go way back and I'll listen to some of my early podcasts and I just go, oh, geez. So you're right. I mean, what we knew then, we didn't know, and we're evolving even now. So get out there and fail and do it today. Seriously, I agree with you.
Yeah, and you have to be willing to do that. You have to be willing. I'm reminded of Denise, there's a fantastic fact of lobsters, if you think about it a second, that they have a soft interior and have that hard shell. Well, that hard shell is they actually grow one, believe it or not, two sizes too big to grow into it. Then in a very painful process, they go and shed that exterior shell and they grow another one. So if you're not willing to be uncomfortable, if you're not willing to go through the pain to learn and grow and adapt and grow a new shell that you can grow into, you're gonna really struggle to remain relevant. And the news that, or the hopefully key takeaway that I want your audience to really hear is this pace of change, this pace that's going to force us to adapt, will only accelerate your need to, as I said earlier, learn more, learn it more quickly, and immediately find opportunities to apply that learning just to remain relevant.
Can you have do you have some examples you can share? Because I'm thinking of several, but I would love to hear from you.
Sure. So a research in curve benders actually identified 15 forces that, let me just give your audience a glimpse into a couple of them, you know, that we believe in the future of how we'll work, how we live, how we play, and how we give, right, is going to create either headwind, tailwind, or turbulence. So one of those obviously is technology, right? So think of all the technical tools that what I call your personal tech stack that you use today. Well, now infuse, you know, AI and machine learning and automation. A lot of those are going to continue to accelerate. And if you just cannot afford to bury your head in the sand and say, that's not what I do, that's not my world, that's not going to be relevant to me. Other areas like visualization. I mean, there's neuroimaging data that shows our brains process visuals 60,000 times faster than we do text. Yet we're all hell-bent on sending War and Peace in emails, right? Stop it. It's not helping
you. I like
War
and Peace. I've read it.
Well, I know. I do,
book.
Too. I do. Just nobody wants to read it in the email, especially on their smartphone.
I
right?
know.
So
we don't. Tell people. Go ahead. I'm sorry. And then I'll interrupt you.
No, I was gonna say most of us now consume or like to consume a lean information diet, right? And we do it on our mobile devices. So I'm a huge believer of, you know, there's enormous value in brevity. How can you say more with less? How can you say it with pictures, not just pages and pages of text, or God help you, spreadsheets that nobody wants to look over?
You're exactly right, and I'm always moving from project to project to thought to thought. I'm constantly, I may be sitting at my desk, but I'm in motion all the time. My brain is in motion. My thought processes are in motion, and I keep explaining to people. I do a lot of web development and a lot of online consulting, and I will have to explain over and over, keep it Homer Simpson silly, you know, stupid. You know, use his language, keep it Homer Simpson simple. I'm sorry. I don't, you know, give me an opening paragraph or opening sentence and three bullet points. That's all I want. And you're going to find that most people just give me some bullet points, give me some images, just keep it simple. We don't want to do that. And I don't know why we don't want to do that, but I agree with you. The minute you can get in my brain and then get back out, I'll like you. If you make me work for it, I'm probably not going to like you very much.
Yeah, I'm a big believer of if you lose people at hello, it's going to be very difficult to get anything else across, right? So again, enormous value and brevity in the future of how we'll work, that's going to become even more important. And the other one that I want your audience to really hear about is this idea of grit. Angela Duckworth has written a book by that title, and it really is the intersection of our passion and perseverance. And I think, I've got two teenagers. My wife and I agreed years ago that we were not going to be helicopter parents and we were not going to coddle them. And it's okay for them to scrape their knees and teach them to get back up and figure out how to learn from that setback and that mistake. And thankfully they've got their mother's, intelligence, and they've done well, and they're incredibly kind and good kids. But that's also the same way that I think we need to engage our relationships and our employees. And, there's something to be said for initiative. There's something to be said for scrappiness, for creativity, for resourcefulness. I don't expect you to have all the answers. What I do expect you to do is not give up because you run into roadblocks. And how can you get creative and resourceful in finding a way? No is just intellectually lazy. Anybody can say no. How can we get creative and get beyond those obstacles that I believe will really set people apart from their peers?
That's brilliant. You know what bugs me a lot is the word fairness. Life's supposed to be fair. This isn't fair. Take that word out of your vocabulary. Nothing is fair. What you make of it is what you make of it. But if you're sitting around waiting for fairness, good luck to you. Life is not supposed to be fair. It's supposed to be a journey.
I want to build on that. A mentor also drove into me that not always the best person makes the decision, not always the fairest person makes the decision, not always the most qualified person makes the decision. It's the person with the power. So the sooner you can to be able to accept that, the person with the power always makes. That's true at the DMV, right? That's true in our universities. That's true in our offices, that's true in every facet of our life. So just let it go. And you worrying about something you have no control over, I love your comment that you're not a worrying type.
No.
You worrying about something you have no control over is you drinking poison, hoping somebody else will die. It just doesn't help. It's not going to get you further along.
That's exactly right. And I thought this since I was a kid. Yeah, I'll look at something and say, well, I may hate it. I may really not like it, but can I be effective in changing it? If the answer is no, then I'm going to go do something different that I can change, that I can be responsible for. So I don't worry. I very rarely worry about anything except right now. And I wouldn't say worry is the proper term, but I am concerned about the internet a lot. But I'm also looking to find other ways to be relevant, to be strategic in case I do lose the internet. I've got other skills. It's time for me to grow those.
And as a great point, I talk in Curvebenders about your personal market value, right? And I actually give a almost like a checklist in terms of a foundational set, in terms of, value accelerants and growth enablers. And this checklist, I think, could be really good for your audience to think through and ask, for all of us to ask ourselves, what am I doing on a daily basis to invest in myself? And I've always believed that education is something no one can ever take away from you, and that personal learning and growth is what keeps you relevant. So the day you stop learning and growing is the day you become complacent. And the day you become complacent, you're no longer valuable to your biggest asset, which is really your portfolio of relationships.
Let's talk about relationships because, look, as I mentioned to you in the virtual green room, I am a card-carrying, highly committed introvert. Highly committed. I mean, I'm not shy. I'm fine out in public. People don't have any idea that I'm an introvert, but I'm only good for 59 and three quarter minutes. After that, I have to go now. I got to go. But the thing is, even being an introvert and almost rarely leaving my home, my groceries were delivered. My car was delivered. I bought my house online. I'm not a shut-in at all, because I get to meet people like you all over the world, literally. Every Friday and every Monday on this podcast, I get to meet the most fascinating people. And oftentimes, very often, I will form strategic relationships with them or friendships. We get Christmas cards back and forth. My cat, Hamilton is an ass. He's a hashtag. Hamilton is an ass. He's famous on Facebook. He gets Christmas cards. I have relationships all over the world, and I thank God every day for those. And that's me being an introvert. So you don't have to be stuck in a word or a term and say, oh, well, I'm an introvert. I'm not going to meet anybody. I meet great people. And I have great relationships with them.
Yeah, and I would, for your audience, I would submit, I wrote about this in Relationship Economics. Most of us have really three buckets. So the first bucket is your personal relationships. These are family and, you know, friends and you know, neighbors, and, you know, they're a lot like us. So A, they're discretionary. We kind of pick them. B, we're never sure how relevant they may be to our professional lives, right? My next door neighbor, Tim, great guy, love going over there. We've become personal friends, but he runs a small, you know, landscape business, and that's not really relevant to the enterprise work that I do. The second bucket are your professional relationships, in that they're functional. We call them functional relationships. And let's be honest, these are some of the people we may just put up with because we have to, right? Some of our colleagues, some of our customers, right? There may not be discretionary, but they're safe because of the context of our work together. You may not pick and choose who you work with. You may not be able to pick and choose your clients. But the context of your work kind of, again, keeps them safe. Most people I meet have plenty of the first two. Personal and functional relationships. Denise, they don't have enough what I call strategic relationships. Strategic relationships, by definition, elevate your thinking. They elevate your perspective. These are great coaches. These are great bosses. These are great mentors. These are people that hopefully you don't feel like you have to impress. And they bring a certain level of candor to our discussions that say, Denise, you are brilliant in these three ideas. And here's some of your growing edges. Here's some of the areas that you really could benefit from elevating your skills, your knowledge, perhaps changing some of your behaviors, because that's what's keeping you back. And not enough people I meet, from frontline contributors to senior executives, have enough strategic relationships that will elevate their thinking, elevate their perspective.
And see, I'm with you. Mentors, teachers, that's who I want to talk with. That's who I want to converse with on social, on the phone, on the podcast. I mean, I'm always looking for people that I can listen to them and go, oh, I never thought of that. Oh, my. And I'm off and I'm thinking about something new, or I'm learning something new. So I actually, of the three buckets you just mentioned, I'm lacking, I guess, if you will, the first two. Not lacking, but they're very tight. Very, very tight. Mm. The last bucket, I have a lot on that bucket, and I'm happy in there.
And I want to give, and that's brilliant that you're aware of that, of your own efforts. For your audience, when this pandemic hit, one of the things I did immediately, and I've recommended it since to several other executives and leaders I've coached, is, I think it was back in March, I immediately made a list of my top 100 relationships. I said, who is most relevant? Who is most valuable? Who do I want to make sure I proactively stay in touch with? And Denise, I literally went down the list and I just started calling them. Not to sell them anything, not to just, how you doing? And what are you seeing? And what are you doing? How are you feeling? And what's going on with you? And I got to tell you, you know, some of those conversations were really hard because you hear of people that, you know, I've had to just lay off a whole bunch of their workforce or shut down. You know, think of the hospitality industry. I talked to one relationship where they shut down, you know, most of their hotels, and they furloughed, you know, 90% of the workforce. Now, thankfully, they've been able to bring some of those folks back, but some of those are painful. And as a friend, Peter Bregman, who wrote a brilliant book called Leading with Emotional Courage, he often says, if you're not willing to feel the pain, the hurt, the disappointment, the frustration, the right? Soon you're not going to feel anything. So not only making a list of those relationships, but proactively reaching out to them to touch base, finding ways to offer to help. You may not always be able to, but if you can add value with every interaction, those who get it, a lot of times will seek you out. Those who get it will a lot of times say, very kind of you, thank you. What can I do to help you? How can I be an asset to you?
Right.
And it's amazing how often that informal exchange of relationship currency, how far that goes in genuinely improving our lives.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that because I'm not a chatty Cathy. You know, I'm always in my own brain. It's fascinating in there. It really is. I'm funny. You know, I have a great sense of humor. I go into my own mind to go, ooh, that was fun. but I'm not a chatty Cathy. I'm not a phone person. You know, I'm just not. I never have been. But after this happened, I felt this strong need to actually pick up the phone and call people that, you know, I may email with them, we'd text back and forth, but I picked up the phone and I called a lot of people, people that I hadn't actually spoken with in quite a long time. And you're right. You know, there were great stories. There were bad stories. There was, you know, reciprocal. How can I help you? Thank you so much for calling. You know, just kind of reconnected. And I'm still doing it because I have well over 100 people I need to still connect with. So that phone, and so many of us don't do that. Text, email, whatever. Pick up the darn phone. Have a conversation. It will change things.
Let me share with the audience a more recent one. Because of this pandemic, I honestly think that there's this incredible pent-up demand for human interaction again, right? Like in person.
Yes.
So how do you do that? How do we do that safely? How do we do that in a socially distant way? And believe it or not, and again, I got to give Niloufer Merchant credit for this. She talked about this years ago. She called it, you know, walking meetings. I'm blessed that I live close to a park. And I got to tell you, in the last 6-9 months, I have at least one or two walking meetings a week where, you know, either friends who live nearby or colleagues or even some clients who know where I live, and they come by and we literally go walk around this, you know, beautiful park, and you obviously are outdoors, you wear masks, you keep your distance, but it's a chance to see them again and reconnect and reengage and ask, how you doing through all this craziness and what's happening with you? And I would highly encourage, I've had socially distant wine and cheese gatherings in my front porch. I've had, you know, I've even flown our local, you know, hero of airline Delta does a phenomenal job with their cleaning, and they don't sell middle seats. And I felt really comfortable flying. I went across the country and did an outdoor leadership program for a client. So I think there's going to continue to be this pent up demand to reconnect and reengage. As human beings, we're tactile, and finding safe ways
right.
to do that, I think, is really important.
Right. You're absolutely correct. And it's, you know, even for people like me who just want to be left alone for the most part, when we decide we need to be around others, we really need to be around others, like right now, yesterday. So we just go do it. You know, we find a way. But yeah, you're right. And people, I think communication is so important. We need to find stronger ways, more strategic ways, kinder ways to communicate. And be consistent with communicating, which I think falls, we're all guilty of this. You know, you'll have a great conversation with someone. A year later, you're like, oh, I have not spoken to Lon in a year. What the heck happened? I think consistency is a big part of it, too.
And it reminds me of another tip for your audience. I don't know about your world or your audience's world, but a lot of times my work, and rightfully so, slows down, you know, around November for the U.S. Thanksgiving or around, you know, Christmas holidays. And it's a fantastic time to likewise sit and think about what relationships did you neglect this past year? Right. And why? And, you know, you met that brilliant person at a conference in February. Right. And then this global pandemic happened and you come across their email or you come across their business card. For our younger audience, business cards are these rectangular paper-based products that we used to carry around.
Next, explain wall phones. Is, talk about wall phones and clocks.
Right. Or God help you, Rolodexes, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, making a list of relationships you left neglected and really becoming more proactive and reconnecting with them. And again, use this podcast as an excuse. I heard this guy talk about relationships, and I've done a terrible job staying in touch with you. Would love to reconnect and just kind of hear about your year and how was 2020 for you. I think everybody's so eager to get out of 2020. I think there's some incredible lessons we can all learn and share those. And that's, again, as I said earlier, that's how we learn. That's how we're going to grow.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to tell you, I'm not in any hurry to get out of this. I mean, what would the point be? It could be more the same next year. So it's just a turn in the calendar. I don't even worry about that kind of thing. Yeah, I'm here now. I'm coping now. I'm learning now. I'm growing now. I'm good with now.
And I got to tell you, I saw a meme the other day. It says if 2020 was a hula hoop and the whole thing was made out of barbed wire.
I was going to make that my
really struggled.
I saw a door wreath on Pinterest the other day. It was just a big old circle of barbed wire, and that was the door wreath.
Right.
There weren't any. There was nothing else on it. It was just here you go. That's,
right.
It was funny,
I think a lot of us. It's certainly an unexpected year and a painful for some. And your heart goes out to those who've lost loved ones or those who've had to shut their business down. Or, you know, I've got a lot of friends in the travel and hospitality business. And you know, from brick and mortar retail to, again, hospitality to education to a lot of these industries have just gotten completely hammered. Yet I want your audience to hear this. There's never been a better time to blame outside forces for problems of our own making. A lot of these companies, a lot of these industries had problems way before COVID came around. COVID just exacerbated it. COVID really brought some of those weaknesses front and center. So that's what I'm saying about what a phenomenal opportunity to learn through the pain, learn through these setbacks, learn through what didn't work about how to adapt and how to really leverage those learnings to become better people, better teams, better organizations, if not a more resilient industry moving forward.
Right. And you know what I keep hearing when I'm listening to you is it's this thought bubble that pops up over my little pea brain. Communication. I think we're learning new ways of communication. What's important in communication, brevity is certainly important, but also kindness.
You're exactly right. And if I could build on that, I really think about the three-legged stool of that communication, collaboration, and change. If you think about it, all three of them, a lot of our assumptions, a lot of what we thought we knew, and certainly a lot of practices that we've gotten very comfortable with have just been turned upside down. Like I said, we had to learn how to wash our hands again. So how do you show up digitally if you can't meet the person in person? How do you collaborate with teams and increasingly people both inside and outside your organization that are all over the globe? Right? Who's going to get up middle of the night for your conference call or your next Zoom meeting or Microsoft Team meeting? And then change, embracing it, adapting to it, learning from it, applying that learning as quickly as possible to the next iteration of it. Denise, I've never been afraid of what I don't know. I'm always afraid of what I don't know I don't know. Because that's a 2x4 that's coming at you with a rusty nail in it. And you're exactly right. Not just communication, not just how do we engage, how do we influence, how do we demonstrate a greater level of empathy, a greater level of kindness. Sometimes to people we don't have a reason to, but how do we also digitally build relationships that we nurture to get things done? I've always said collaboration for sake of collaboration is a waste of time. collaboration to make that end result stronger, end result better is priceless. And then how do we collectively, through our relationship,
say that again. That was important.
Really adapt.
Yeah, say that again because
yeah,
I want people to remember that.
Sure. I've always believed collaboration for sake of collaboration is a waste of time. Right? Let's meet. My first question is why? Right? Or can we get on a conference call? I'm sorry, why? Right? So collaboration for that sake of collaboration is a waste of time. Collaboration to make the end result stronger, better, more efficient, more impactful is priceless. So what we've learned in 2020, what we've learned amid this pandemic is how to collaborate more efficiently, more effectively, more impactfully. Not every meeting needs to be an hour. Not every Zoom session or Microsoft Team or WebEx needs 75 people on it. How do we behave more like SEAL Team 6s to get in, get it done, get out, versus a battalion that takes 6 months to make a decision? So what I'm seeing is more leaders are really narrowing down their priorities to what are the top three, what are the top five most impactful things we can focus on, creating more micro teams of who are the three, who are the five people that can move this idea forward, and shrinking their timeline. How can we get this done in a week instead of a month? How do we get this done in a month instead of 6 months? Because that's you brought it up, speed and agility matters more than ever before. When you're 60% ready, when you're 80% ready, move. Because
right, it's not going to be perfect. Just get it going.
Be the enemy
exactly.
of progress.
Absolutely.
Right. So the more you develop a bias. Yeah, bias for action.
Well, perfectionism to me is nothing but procrastination. So if you feel like you need it to be perfect, go ahead and put it away because you're never going to do it. You're just not.
And the cycles you're going to waste to make it perfect is actually a missed opportunity.
I know. It really is. So, and I learned because, look, I'm a recovering perfectionist. I know this about myself. So now I say, okay, how far are we in this process? Is this good enough to go? And basically, I'm talking about web development, but and I will tell my clients, listen, it's not going to be perfect the first time. You ever seen a book that didn't have typos in it? We're going to see things that we missed. As we get it up and we get it running, now we're going to go, ooh, now we need this. Oh, we need that. And what the heck were we thinking over there? I will always tell my clients, once I launch it, it's not one and done. We're still going to be working on it because it's a work in progress. It always is. It's not going to be perfect. And we're fine. Just get up there. So once they understand that I'm not going to abandon them and say, well, you paid me, I'm done. Then we've got a working relationship and we've got something that's growing.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And that, as I said earlier, the bias for action, the bias for move ideas
right.
forward, socialize them quickly, right? Find others who are willing to give you candid input on how to improve them, how to really make them better. By the way, it takes an enormous amount of maturity to have somebody call your baby ugly, right? I've been working on this project for 6 months. I show it to you,
and you
throw up all over it, right? You got to stop taking that as a personal attack. They're not really dragging your mother into it, right? So if we're hard on ideas and we attack ideas to improve them, never the individuals, what a brilliant opportunity to make that better, make it more efficient, make it, I love it when others bring up perspectives that I haven't thought of around my idea, right? I've always said, we're talking about my book. I learn as much about my book and my ideas after it's published because people read it and they have their own lenses and their own stories and their own perspectives and they challenge some of your assumptions. You're like, that's interesting. I've never thought about it that way. And now you've got, great nuggets for the second edition. You've got ideas of how to improve the idea. And I still see, Denise, a lot of leaders get defensive. And it may be angst of the time. It might be the countless number of pressures that are on all of our shoulders, but they still get defensive when somebody brings up an opportunity to improve their idea, or they get they try to justify it. I have a mentor who says nothing ever good comes after but, right? And however is just a fancy way of saying but. So it's yes and it's, and by the way, it's a great book. Yes, and how do we build on that idea? How do we help elevate that idea? That's interesting. And I've always, one more tip that I think for you and your audience, I've always believed that you're better off conveying your credibility through the questions you ask, not necessarily the solutions you provide. So how awesome to go to that next meeting or that next conversation with, that's interesting. I wonder about this, or have you thought about that? Or what if we tried this approach? Cover a great conversation and a great insight into a new path.
Well, and that's why you want to have these, I'm not going to call them round tables, but that's kind of where I'm going with it. When you pick those three minds that you were talking about, listen, anybody who's been part of a board or a committee will always know that there's two or three people that do everything, everything, and everybody else is just sitting there waiting for the popcorn to show up. And so, you know, find those people who will do things, who do have great ideas, and communicate with them. And then what do you do, though? Because you don't want to leave everybody out. So how do you bring people in that you know are going, then maybe they're going to vomit all over your website. I mean, they may well. So what do you do next? I mean, who do you bring in? Not the client, but maybe somebody else that you can say, listen, I have this client. I find them very difficult. In fact, I hate them. You go down that road. But then you get over it and say, okay, I can see where they're right. Do you have any ideas to help me fix this? So you bring in people who can go, you know, Denise, I don't have a dog in this hunt. I didn't build it. I'm not getting paid for it. But did you think about this? Oh, so, I mean, I'm perfectly willing to bring in other eyes always, because what I think my baby ought to look like may not be the right idea. And I have to, you know, be aware of that and deal with it.
You're exactly right. In many projects, in many initiatives, I learned this years ago serving on a couple of nonprofit boards, you very quickly figure out who the workhorses are and who the show horses are. And you want to mm-hmm. surround yourself with more of the workhorses that, like I said, think of it as your, you know, personal board of advisors or personal board of directors or your inner circle. Interestingly enough, athletes and entertainers have this. Not enough business professionals have an inner circle. Small group of people you like, you respect, you trust, that you don't have to impress. This isn't a religious comment, but the pastor at our church often says, the bigger the gap between who you really are and who you pretend to be, the more exhausting life becomes. So if you surround yourself with a few people that you hopefully don't have to impress, and you can open up to and say candidly, here's what I'm struggling with, or here's something I'm trying to work on. What do you think? And then have that emotional maturity to just sit back and listen to their input. If they have a genuinely authentic vested interest in your success, they're not going to have a problem saying, ooh, Denise, I love that. I don't know about this part. Or, ooh, that sounds great. Why are you doing this again? And that's exactly the candor you need to hear. By the way, a lot of people want to help. They don't know how to help. So you have to create an environment for them to help you, to give you that candid input. And
oh, good
a
point.
Lot of people are reluctant to call your baby ugly, right? So you've got to give them permission. It's like, listen, I'm looking for your critical eye. I'm looking for your help in, here's a article I just wrote. I read, there's a reason restaurants, for our audience, restaurants are these things we used to go to where we physically have, you know, meals in a building. You know, so restaurants used to
indoors.
Have soft openings when, right? Right. They would have these soft openings where they invite friends and family and, you know, to test out the menu and work out the process and kinks and all that stuff. Think, what's your soft opening for your ideas, for your perspectives, for your you know, projects, for your initiatives, for your websites, for things that are important to you, who would you invite to be your soft opening to kind of work through the kinks? Because that friendly fire is a lot easier to fix and hear than, God forbid, a client or somebody you really are trying to impress.
Exactly. And I'll tell you one thing. I mean, I do ask for a lot of strategic help because I've learned that I cannot do it all myself. I'm not the smartest person in the room. Hang on a second. I am, because I live alone. So I am the smartest person in the room. But I have to not take that into the rest of my life. And that was difficult for somebody like me. I mean, I'm an A type. You know, I do things my own way. But I have learned that other people often, very often, will take an idea that I've got or a project, and they'll just make it better just by going, you know what? Did you think about this? Did you think about maybe using Keep or Infusionsoft instead of, you know, this particular schedule? I'll be darned. No, I didn't think about that. So, you know, just technical things like that. And on my team, I had to learn, and this is something that I was not happy about, but I had to learn because, you know, I'm arrogant. But when I hire people to work on my team, and if they're working on Infusionsoft or Keep or whatever technique it is, they have to be better than I am. I need to know enough about it to ask them what has to happen, or, you know, convey what has to happen, but they have to be better than I am. And that was hard for me to understand, but it made my life much better.
What I love about this conversation is you're highlighting exactly how I define curve benders, which is strategic relationships.
Oh, good.
Who can accelerate?
I was just getting ready to
your ability
you,
to learn,
you know, what,
your ability to grow. Yeah.
I keep interrupting. You must be on a cell phone, or we have a little bit of a delay. I'm not doing it on purpose, I promise. But one of the things was, I was just getting ready to ask you, what are curve benders exactly? How did you come up with that term?
Sure. So as I mentioned, the 15 forces that really create headwind, tailwind, or turbulence in our future, I believe to remain relevant, you're going to have to continue to learn and grow, as we've discussed, as an individual, as a team, as an organization. For most people, that learning and growth, Denise, is a linear curve. And I'm going to take your audience back to, you know, one of the first algebra classes they took. A linear curve is just 45 degree angle from bottom left to the top right, right? It's just a straight line across. Well, as I said earlier, I believe the pace of change is going to force us to adapt, learn, grow faster. So that linear curve will no longer suffice. It will not be enough. I believe, and our research shows, certain relationships come into our lives that dramatically, if not profoundly, change both our direction and our destination to become more like a hockey stick, more like a nonlinear curve. I call those relationships curve benders. So beyond what we can accomplish, Denise, they shape who we become. And years later, you look back and say, I am here, this point in my life, because of these individuals. There are potentially great bosses, they're great mentors, they're great coaches, but they're individuals who shape us and shape the individuals, the managers, the leaders we become, and we're profoundly better off because of them. By the way, curve benders typically move us in a positive direction. There's also some relationships that have the potential of taking you in the wrong direction. I call those fender benders. And the goal is to stay away from those as often as possible.
Can you share the 15 forces that impact the way we work? Do you have time to go through a very quick list of those?
Absolutely. So we've broken them up into three buckets. There's five in your, we'll call those personal forces. So your relationship strategy, grit, your mindset, diversifying your skills, your revenues, your relationships, and five is visualization. So visualizing where you're going, how you're going to get there. Those are five personal forces. There's three organizational forces, and those are demographics. So we're living longer, we're working longer. visionary storytelling, right? People are not going to remember your points, but how can they remember the stories you tell in a visual manner? And then this idea of co-creation, right? So none of us have all the answers. How do we co-create a very different future? And then there's five industry forces that, again, have a much broader impact. So those are haves versus have-nots, shrinking planet, geopolitics, black swan events, and volatility. And if your audience is counting, that's actually 13. There's two forces that believe they're transitory. So they kind of bridge one force to another. One is technology, the other one's economy. So those 15 forces, and in chapter two where I talk about it, there's actually a scorecard. And I ask the readers to grade yourself A, B, C, or F as in failing. How are you grading both the relevance, your knowledge, and your efforts in this area? And at the end, there's a little scorecard that not only you capture your own grade, but create a set of action items. So you may think geopolitics has nothing to do with what I do. I would submit it has a lot to do with what you do because it impacts your ability to succeed in a market. Or demographics doesn't have anything to do with what I do. Well, you know what? We're all, like I said, living longer and we're working longer and we want to create a longer impact. Somebody said the other day, you know, 90 is the new 60, right? So if that's the case, how will you remain relevant for a longer period of time? So all of those forces, you need to certainly be aware of them. You need to certainly think how they may impact your life. And more importantly, how can you get more proactive in thinking about them and really making them an asset and not necessarily a liability?
Okay. And I'm following everything that you just said there except Black Swan event. What is that?
I'm glad you asked. Black Swan events are actually a good example is this current COVID pandemic. These are events that we understand. We know they're going to happen because we knew what a pandemic was. We've seen them before. We just don't know when they're going to happen. Impact of these events on our lives. So again, the September 11 terrorist attacks. We had had terrorist attacks before. We certainly didn't know when that one was going to happen or the, again, economic, socioeconomic impact it would have on our lives. This pandemic, we've had pandemics before, but nobody saw the impact that this thing could have or would have on our lives. So Black Swan events are events that are going to create massive disruption in our lives. We know about them, as I said earlier, like cyber. We know cyber attacks happen hundreds, if not thousands of times every day. The next big one that could shut down our global economy, right? We don't know when that one could happen, but we know it's possible. Or natural disasters, right? We know that they're possible when the next big one that could happen, that could, again, have massive disruption in our lives, no one knows. But those are examples of Black Swan events.
So September 11th, that broke my heart. And the internet, I mean, seriously, I don't think it's when it's going to happen, if it's going to happen, I think it's when it's going to happen. There are forces that we have no idea what's going on, but they'll do it just for the pure heck of it. It'll happen. It's going to happen and we have to be aware and make sure that we have some safety at home, whether it's food or, you know, some hidden cash or whatever it is. But, you know, I tell everybody, listen, I live in Hurricane Alley. We've had, well, 6 hurricanes this year in the season, but 4 came directly to my state. 2 came knocking on my door, 2 of them. I need a new roof, a mailbox, and some new windows. It's just what it is. But I always tell people, you know, it doesn't matter where you live. Have stores, have water, have store, have candles, have batteries. You know, make sure that if something does go wrong, the internet goes out, the power goes down, you're going to be okay for a few weeks or a month or whatever it's going to take. And it stuns me that people don't do that. I don't understand it. Okay, did I lose
you're
you?
Exactly
you're still
right.
There?
And it goes back to really having a resilient mindset that says, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you now. We are having some delays, so, you know.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you. We're having delays, but it's all right. We'll work with it.
Yeah, and it goes back to a resilient mindset that says, you know, I'm not going to be dependent on any one facet of my life. I'm not going to be so dependent on it that if it goes away, I'm going to be in deep trouble. So you're exactly right. It's I'm reminded of, you know, I'm an old Eagle Scout, and one of the mottos you live by in scouting is always, you know, be prepared. And whether it's emergency food and shelter or access, or again, for business professionals, what are those skills? What are those, you know, what's that knowledge? What are those behaviors that are value creators? How can you identify those and really build on those to really enhance your agility, your ability to adapt? And I want to go back to the way we started this conversation, that elasticity is what's going to get you through almost any obstacle. Is how can I, none of us have a crystal ball. None of us will be able to see it. I believe we can all plan for it. And that's really what the Curve Bender's book is all about. How can you more proactively plan for an increasingly uncertain future?
Absolutely. You know, this reminds me, we're talking about, you know, things that can go wrong. Hurricane Katrina was, you know, I'm in Louisiana. Hurricane Katrina was a big thing for us. And I was hired to, there was only one hospital that was really running or, you know, still working in the New Orleans area. And I was hired to take water, ice, and infant formula to this hospital. And we found the water. We found the formula. Walmart was terrific. We gave them, I think, $20,000, and they loaded our trucks up. We had a horrible time finding trucks to rent. We got the last three that nobody ever wanted ever again. What we could not find, David, was ice. It didn't exist in the state. But you know what I did? I went to all the crawfish farmers because a lot of them have their own ice plants. And I called everyone I could find, and God bless them. They fired up those plants. They fired them up with generators, and a couple of them had their own trucks. They drove it to the hospital. We found the ice. But it was because strategic relationships. Who did I know? Who could I call? Who could I find that could help? We did it.
You're exactly right. And what a great example. Again, bringing it back full circle for your audience. You know, there's a great book. The title of it is, you know, Dig Your Well Before You Need It, right? Make a list of those relationships that are most valuable, most relevant to you now, and really invest in those relationships now before you need them. Because it's going to be a heck of a lot easier for you to tap into those when you need them versus if you've invested. Versus, hey, I haven't talked to you in 5 years, but hey, can you give me, you know, do me a favor? And it's just not very likely that they'll prioritize you in your time of need.
They sure won't. Listen, we are out of time. Can you believe that hour has gone so quickly? David, where can people find you?
The easiest way is our website, which is just Noor Group, N-O-U-R-Group.com, or you can just Google my name, David Noor, N-O-U-R, and you'll find articles, and I'm fairly active on social and videos and all kinds of other good content.
David, thank you so much for being here, and I'm really sorry we had the delays, but the conversation has been terrific with an amazing amount of information, so I really thank you for being here, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and the advice that you shared with our audience. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. David, thank you again.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.